What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadgarni. Rohan, how was your weekend?
Pretty good, Mike. Can't complain. Had some friends in town. It was a little warm in Los Angeles. But, you know, it's November. I'm not complaining about it being a little warm. So I had a good time. Yeah, no complaints. How about you?
Sounded like you were complaining a little bit about the temperature, which really bugs me.
No, I was just mixing in facts. I just wanted to give people a full picture of, you know, what was going on.
My parka is not fully unpacked, but we're taking steps mentally and physically towards right. Taking it out of the closet, and I'm just not ready. I'm not ready to go there. Not happy about it, but
I don't own any coats anymore. I have to visit New York in late December for a wedding, and I'm gonna have to borrow a coat. I don't own a coat anymore.
All right. Well, that statement by you just depressed the living hell out of me. So we're going to have to just move on to basketball right now. In today's episode, you and I are going to open up the mailbag to chat about surprising player leaps, why Rohan, you hate the Utah Jazz, and so much more. But first, a quick reminder to please keep those emails coming in, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Rohan, before we start answering some listener questions, I wanted to do a little three-week check-in and talk about some preseason predictions that we either got right or wrong, specifically as it relates to the performance of some teams that we were either really high or really low on coming into this season. So why don't you kick things off and tell me a team that you were most incorrect about heading into this season after watching them play about a dozen games?
Are we doing the thing where we're going to give multiple answers for a question? Because I got a couple already.
I have a few as well. Yeah. I can't stick to one.
I'm going to go with the Bulls and Hawks for this one, teams I was the most incorrect about. I think I really expected – I didn't think Chicago was going to be bad. I mean, I really loved the Lonzo signing. I'm a big Caruso guy, as we've discussed on this podcast many times now. And I didn't even hate the DeRozan signing. I just thought – my only issue with the DeRozan signing was who are they bidding against? Did they maybe spend, you know, too much money for DeRozan? And if, frankly, the evidence hadn't been there that he could put up kind of the on-off numbers that he's put up so far this year. So it's not that I thought the Bulls wouldn't compete, but obviously they've been outstanding. They've been one of the best teams in the conference, and if not the league. I don't think it's going to shock either of us if they finish with home court. I don't think it would shock me if they finished anywhere in the top four in the conference at this point, and that was not something I expected, I think, headed into the season. I think I expected them to be more in kind of the second half of the playoff bracket range. So they've been really good. They've played really well. I mean, even surviving the injury to Patrick Williams, they've still been playing really well after that, even though they don't have a ton of size in the front court. I really like what Derek Jones Jr. is doing for them, defensively, especially.
Heat culture, baby, right?
I just think he's a fun guy to watch. His leaping ability, I mean, his offensive rebounding, watching him, Lonzo, and Caruso, you know, whenever those guys or any two of those guys are on the court together, they just play a fun style of basketball. So that's been really cool. On the flip side of that is the Hawks. They were the team I thought
was
going to be...
Let's talk about the Bulls for a second. I actually had...
The interrupter has become the interruptee.
Yes, I learned from the best. I learned from the best. So the Bulls, I actually had in my which team were we most right about, but with a partial... With an asterisk here.
Yeah.
No one in the world thought that they'd have a top five defense at this point in the season, I think, which is just kind of unfathomable. And the lineups that are just putting the clamps on everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at some of these groups and there's two, three really bad, poor, historically defenders in them. Like DeMar DeRozan's career, not a good defender. Zach LaVine's career, maybe slightly underrated defender, but still not even at average, I would say, for his position. Mm-hmm. Vucevic, who's missed a little bit of time because of health and safety protocols, like when he's on the floor, they've had a very good defense. So it's just been, and you mentioned Patrick Williams just not being available, and he was mm-hmm. supposed to be kind of their lockdown guy. So the fact that they have a top five defense, no one expected. I did think that they would be very good. I thought that DeMar and LaVine and Vooch would really be able to play together. I love the Caruso signing and everything he brings to the table in terms of upping their tempo. Same with Lonzo Ball. Thought his three-point shooting was real last season, and he's just been terrific, hitting 45% of his pull-up threes. So the dynamic he brings to the team, and especially in the open floor, has been profound. So from that aspect, like, overall, I'm not surprised by their success, but just like how they're getting there, I just don't know how sustainable it is because of the defense, which, you know, if this keeps up, then this team is just easily going to have a top four seed in the Eastern Conference
for sure. And I will say, I mean, as far as their defense goes, bringing in, you mentioned Lonzo, but Caruso, I brought up Derek Jones Jr., but I do think they have good length that they're throwing at people on the perimeter and just a really athletic defense. And I will say, having someone like guys like Caruso and Ball who don't die on screens, who are guards that have length that are also willing to fight on screens, makes such a big difference for your defense. And it does help cover up for guys like DeRozan and Vooch, because you're not asking them to scramble or cover more ground or protect the rim, you know, as much as you'd have to if they had guys who were not as adept on the perimeters fighting through those screens. So really, they have people on their defense who kind of set the tone and help. You know, it's funny, it's usually those backline defenders, the help defenders, that are the backbone of the defense and kind of saving it. But theirs is the other way around, and I think it's a credit to what their guys on the perimeter have done. But okay, where I was going,
let's go to the Hawks now. Let's go to the
Hawks.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you. I can keep giving my answer now. Thank you. I will say I was also incorrect about the Hawks. I thought they were going to be the top three seed. I thought they were going to be the top four seed. They looked like a team that was primed to kind of take a leap after what they did in the playoffs last season. It seemed like they found their formula for success, running those pick and rolls with Trey, surrounding him with shooters. Guys who can create a little bit off the dribble. They just had a very modern, well-constructed team, a lot of depth on the wing. Everyone was going to be healthy. This was going to be a focused. I would not, you know, wouldn't have shocked me if this team finished second even in the standings heading into the season, just because they were young and I think going to be more motivated than, say, the Bucks or the Nets in the regular season. Instead, they've kind of scuffled a bit. They haven't looked great. No one's really talking about them in the national conversation the way Trey captured our imagination during the playoffs. It's not like he's been in the MVP talk or anything like that. He was struggling to start the year. Some people were talking about the foul rules, etc. And now on top of that, DeAndre Hunter, who missed a big chunk of time last season, came back in the middle of the playoffs and wasn't as effective. He's getting surgery again, missing 8 weeks at least this time, according to Shams Charania. So that's a team that I just thought they were like that young team that had kind of had the playoff heartbreak and now was going to, and that kind of etched their veteran status. They were going to be kind of a little bit more formidable now, a little bit more of a known entity. But instead, they've kind of fallen back, I think, a little bit closer to where the Hawks were entering last season as opposed to this one.
Yeah, so I also had Atlanta here in this category, and they've had a fascinating start to me, one that is really flummoxing in terms of, like, you know, I did not expect their defense to be 28th or 27th, whatever it is in the league at this point. That's been very disappointing. You look at the free throw rate team-wide. It was second best in the NBA last season. It was a huge part of their success. It's down to about league average, I believe, which is just like a huge plummet. Actually, it's way below league average. I'm sorry. I'm editing myself on the fly here. It ranks 23rd in the league, according to Cleaning the Glass. But, you know, there were also elements of this team coming in that made me – I was very high on them, but made me, like – okay, like, be a little cautious. And, like, you look at the net rating of this team in the playoffs last year when they went on their run. It was negative. They had a negative net rating, which I don't think a lot of people talk about too much. And they were bad when healthy all of last season. When everyone, they have too many cooks in the kitchen. And that was a big theme in the cover story I wrote about Trey and the Hawks coming into this season. So you talk about DeAndre Hunter's injury. Frankly, you know, it sounds messed up to say this. I think that's going to be really good for them. Interesting. And
I mean, I think he's such an important player to what they want to do, though, Mike.
No doubt about it. He's humongous. But when you talk to all the players on the team about the need to sacrifice and how difficult that is, all of them talked about rhythm and how tricky it is as a young player to know kind of if you don't know when your shots are coming. Like if you watch Cam Reddish right now this season, basically when he touches the ball, he shoots the ball because he doesn't know when he's going to get it back, and he doesn't know his place, and he doesn't really know his role. Or maybe they told him his role was, hey, you're going to be our Jamal Crawford off the bench, and that maybe not be the best thing for the offense or the team's cohesiveness. So I think that as things kind of simmer out, people can find their roles as, as with Hunter out, there's going to be just more opportunity, more minutes for other players. So I think that could be good. And I don't know, I think it's a really complicated puzzle, but if everything comes together and they're able to put it, all the pieces in the right spots, I still think that they're very, very good, and they could easily turn the season around. They've had the hardest schedule in the NBA so far, like by far hardest schedule. So, you know, they're coming off this 20-point victory against the Milwaukee Bucks, a Bucks team that didn't have Brooke Lopez or Chris Middleton. But I thought that win, they were very impressive in a lot of ways. And we started to see just like how much better Kevin Huerter can be in a bigger role and what Cam will look like in a different role with DeAndre Hunter out. So I'm fascinated by this team. I think their defense needs to pick it up a little bit, but I'm not panicking, but I definitely was not anticipating this much of a struggle from them.
Well, two things. You brought up the negative net rating in the playoffs. That is funny. Something people don't really talk about. People talk about that Philly series like it wasn't a 7-game series, like the Sixers didn't also somehow win 3 games.
And blew like 24 point leads.
Yeah. And yeah, if they had taken Simmons off the floor in some of those fourth quarters, who knows? It just is. I agree. There is some revisionist history, it does feel like, about that playoff series. I'm curious where you fall on the Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter. There's some idea that the Hawks are eventually going to choose, you know, amongst their perimeter rotation guys. Maybe they won't be able to afford to keep all of them, even though I think there's no reason for them not to. Projecting long term, is there one of those guys you'd rather have?
I mean, it's coming into this season, I think it was easily Hunter for me.
Same.
But I'm not off that response quite yet. I'm a little nervous about Hunter's ability to stay healthy now, frankly. And that the knee injury that he had last year, I mean, 2 surgeries. And, you know,
and
that's
he's young for to be having these many injury issues. Yeah.
So that's not nothing. His ceiling still seems to me like to be like perennial all-star two-way wing that every very good team needs and would be a perfect fit with what they have going for them. But Cam looks like he just looks really confident in a way that he hadn't in his first 2 years right now. And like the bag is deep with Cam Reddish, and I love it. And I think that he's also can be a very good two-way player who, you know, there's some time, someday, if he gets traded to a different team, I can see him having a Paul George-esque career. So it's tough. Like, I don't know who's the better player versus who's the better fit might be a different question and yield a different answer for this type
That's
of situation.
A good way to look at it.
So it's... Yeah,
no, I think we're in the exact same spot because I really thought this was going to be like a DeAndre Hunter breakout season. I thought he was going to have, you know, he was going to be a big reason why they were going to be so playing so well and have a high seed, etc. Instead, he's got this injury and not quite looking, I think, playing to the potential we both think he has as that perennial two-way all-star. And you mentioned Reddish. I mean, yeah, he does maybe like to shoot because there, like you said, a lot of cooks in the kitchen. But he has – I wish DeAndre Hunter had his creativity or his gumption sometimes. Like, there's a little bit of each other's games. I wish they could steal from each other because Cam Reddish does have that little bit of, I think, more irrational confidence that you kind of need sometimes. Like DeAndre Hunter seems to always want to do the right thing. Not that Cam Reddish is doing the wrong thing, but DeAndre Hunter doesn't seem to go off script as often as that's how I would describe it. So it is an interesting, not dilemma, but kind of situation, I think, to keep an eye on the wing there. But yeah, the Hawks, man, they've been the defense being as poor as it's been, because historically, it's been good when Capella's been on the floor. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. But it's been I think they'll be fine, but I do also think I wasn't necessarily expecting them to make it back to the conference finals anyway this season. But I'm a little surprised at how the regular season is shaken out for them.
Yeah, they've gotten pillaged at the rim, which was not the case at all last year. Last year they were very good defending the rim.
That's a great use of pillaged.
Thank you. Yeah. Pillaged is an underrated word in my opinion.
They've been sieged at the rim. Yeah.
I always got excited when I saw it in a history book growing up. So, shout out to social studies.
I don't know about that one.
Big subject for me.
I don't know about that one. That's usually not. See, it was never cool when someone got pillaged throughout history. I'll just throw that out there. I don't want to co-sign that
thing.
That's
a fair,
anti-pillaging.
Yeah, fair counterpoint. Yeah. Fair. Yeah. Okay, so tell me some teams or a team that you feel like, hey, consensus was thinking this, and I thought this, and I'm right. So double middle fingers up to everybody and all my skeptics.
I'm going to go with the Golden State Warriors. Now, I'm not going to pretend like I had them as the number one seed. But as you know, Mike, I was talking about the Warriors when we were talking season preview ideas for Sports Illustrated. What do we want to do for our season preview show? I kept talking about the Warriors. I've been calling that, you know, a week or two ago, I think I called them the most dangerous team in the West. I have so much faith in Steph and Dre together that obviously last year, you know, they were a playing team. They ended up not making the playoffs, but Steph was coming back from injury. They were trying to work in Wiseman, and you know, Kerr said at the beginning of the season, we're not really chasing wins. And it felt like they didn't really push like they should have pushed. This year, they still have the young guys on the roster. When you look at who they're playing, it's Bielitsa, it's Otto Porter, it's Andre Iguodala. Iguodala's been incredible this season. He's been really good. He looks like he's found the fountain of youth there. I think Wiggins is playing very well in his role. I just think you surround Steph and Dre with capable vets, and this is what you get. You get a really good team. Now, I know you and Chris talked about them on the pod last week. I think you guys did bring up some good points. A lot of home games. Schedule's been good to them. You know, there are reasons why maybe their success has been so great early in the season. At the same time, they're far and away the best team in net rating in the NBA. They've been great on both sides of the ball. I'm going with the Warriors. I'm not going to pretend like I thought they were going to be this great, but I had a lot of faith in bringing in capable guys around Steph and Dre. And once they get Clay back, I mean, I think the ceiling is title. I think they're right up there with any team in the league.
The ceiling is definitely title, I would say, for the Warriors. I like how you called Andre, what'd you use the word, amazing? To describe Andre shooting 19% from the 3-point line, averaging
his defensive numbers have been outstanding. I mean, look, they've been the best defense in the league, and they're defending their asses off when he's on the court. I know he might not be the steal Nemanja Bjelica, but Mike,
exactly.
I get it. You're
one
of those guys.
Put some respect on Nemanja Bjelica's name,
Mike. You're one of those guys. You look at the box score, you see how many points someone scored, and that's what you used to determine if they had a good game or not. I get it. You're one of those. You don't care if somebody's playing good defense.
Worst read on my taste and what I do that I've ever heard. But
it's more about you're just playing NBA 2K. You haven't watched the basketball game in years. Yeah.
Nailed it. So the Warriors, I thought that they could be really good. I think they were in my top tier when we did the tiers episode. With three other teams in the Western Conference. So obviously I was pretty high on them. This is surprising to me how good everything looks and how similar all of their offensive numbers are to when they were like in the middle of a dynasty. Really, like the off-ball cutting, or I should say the off-ball screens, the cutting, the like seconds per touch, how the ball just hops better in Golden State than in any other city in the league. Like, it's just really fun to watch them play, and Steph is probably the MVP. Draymond is probably the defensive player of the year. You add the right pieces around those guys. Klay hasn't even come back, but you add the pieces that they did, Bielitsa, Iguodala, Damian Lee, Jordan Poole, those two kind of emerging as really central forces. You had Kuminga last night, even though they lost. He looked like, okay, they might have something here with Kuminga. Like, that would be ridiculous if he was able to crack their rotation and give them 15 minutes a night this season. So, yeah, like, championship is definitely the ceiling. I think I thought that as well, but I did not expect them to, like, double up on net rating 3 weeks into the season on the second best team. That was not
a week ago you were telling me you were still higher on Utah than Golden State, so it's good to see
we're gonna
you
get to Utah
it's gonna good get to see Utah, you kind of so coming to the light, the side of the light. I'm glad that we brought you over here, but I don't know
we're gonna talk about Utah in a sec. So can I tell you a team now that I
feel that you were right about?
Rohan.
All right. I'll say my team, Mike, but only because I think it's a team that we're going to both have on our list on teams we were right about. And I'm going to say the LA Lakers.
Oh, wow. You know, I didn't have them on my list, but I 100% agree. That was an oversight on my part.
No, that's okay. I mean, I just think we dedicated a lot of podcast space before the season to how we were both deeply skeptical of the Lakers, thought they lost the Russell Westbrook trade, thought that,
facts,
you know, LeBron was a little bit of a, is he getting older? And now he's hurt. We were, can Russ carry the team when LeBron is not there? He hasn't quite done that. We had a lot of questions about their depth. Melo's been great, but the shooting is clearly unsustainable. They're somehow 8-6, which is, to me, shocking. Like, they are, the way they're talked about, you would think they're something like 4-12. But the net rating is a negative. LeBron, we still have no clue when he's going to come back. Their wins are either like these thrillers where they squeak by a team, but their losses are like almost always debilitating in some way. I just think that they've been every bit of a conundrum and question mark as we thought they would be heading into the season. And if we were able to predict all these possible pitfalls and they're coming through, I'm not quite sure how the front office didn't see it, but that's where we are. And so I will... I'll throw the Lakers. I thought you were ready to just gleefully dump all over them. I'm shocked they weren't on your list. I thought you were getting ready to... We were going to have to call the ISO, put you on the block, and let you cook, you know?
I appreciate that. Yeah. I think they didn't, probably because, well, we will be proven right. I find it hard to, like, beat up on this team with LeBron James missing over half their games. You know what I mean? Like... that wasn't necessarily caked into why I thought they would struggle. When he was healthy, they were struggling and beating up on really bad teams. They were struggling against quality teams because the fit with Westbrook has been atrocious. But, you know, Frank Vogel over the past couple games, at least, has decided to start Anthony Davis at the five. So we're making baby steps in the right direction. Proud of the Lakers for that.
Another thing we talked about.
Yes. The fact that took a dozen games is like a sham. But so on Cleaning the Glass, there's this stat called win differential, which is basically the difference between the number of games the team has won and what would be expected.
Yes.
Right. Based on their expected efficiency differential. And no surprise, the Lakers are first in that category.
Of course.
So they should not be, they're not really an 8-6 team. Yeah. And I think that should be factored in when you look at them right now.
The Grizzlies, you know, I remember, were another team that had a negative net rating and a 500 record. Or
they're up there. Yeah, they actually rank. They rank fourth in this stat. So the Lakers, you know, I want to give it a little bit more time, frankly. I want to see, you know, I want to see Russ look a little more comfortable than he has. And that's just like more style of play thing than, oh, is Russ going to hit his threes tonight? I don't think that that's ever going to happen. That ship has sailed. But him playing in better lineups that are just more conducive to his own success, surrounded by shooting and AD, rolling at the five, I want to wait and see with that, because I think that there is a possibility that they turn things around. But right now, I think, yeah, we've been right about this. The other team...
If only they could play the Heat every night and Malik Monk could hit every single one of his shots.
Yes, and Tyler Hero could miss all of his free throws. Yeah.
And look like prime...
That's another one.
Michael Jordan, yeah.
So the other team that I feel like I want to take a little victory lap on is the Clippers. So that's a team that's
been a roller coaster ride for you. That's been a roller coaster ride for you.
It's started bumpy, I'm not gonna lie, but I always thought, just even watching the team play, that they would figure things out. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, they look really good. Obviously no Kawhi, even without Marcus Morris, you know, they went on a 7-game winning streak, beat some not like the greatest defensive teams in the history of the NBA, but some quality competition, including a really nice win over the Miami Heat. So, you know, Paul George, he's just like an MVP
win.
Candidate, straight up.
Yeah.
It was a fine win, Jimmy but Butler's it was a necessary win.
Yeah.
I know. The listeners are smart. They understand what I'm trying to say. But, you know, when I looked at this team, and I wrote about this before the season began, really, it was just like, okay, they have a top 10 player, pseudo top 10 player, whatever, you know, we can quibble, Paul George, that's mm-hmm. a start. And then they just have tons of shooting, tons of two-way talent, all these lineups that can play big, that can play small. Hartenstein has been great, a greater fit than I thought, and frankly, like, Serge Ibaka might not crack the rotation again. Terrence Mann is like an all defensive guard who picks up the other point guard 94 feet like Patrick Beverley did last year, except he's a little bit more dynamic offensively with a little bit more size. Luke Kennard's hitting every three he takes. Justice Winslow hasn't really even looked good, and he was one of the reasons why I thought they were going to be good. Mm-hmm. So I love the Clippers. I think they're playing great basketball right now.
No, I think that's a great call by you. I think we both like the Clippers headed into the season. Something that never made sense to me was how many people were kind of poo-pooing them or not talking about them or shoveling a little bit of dirt on them headed into the season when they played so well in the playoffs last season without Kawhi. They were really good. Mm-hmm. I honestly, they weren't a favorite, but it wouldn't have shocked me if they ended up winning the title even without Kawhi, frankly. That's how good they were playing. They knocked out the Jazz practically without him. They had a great series with the Suns. I mean, you guys remember the Valley Oop. Like, that series was neck and neck.
They should have won that series. I will go to my grave believing that. Sorry, Suns fans.
And then you know, they start this season. I think they started, what, 1-4, 1-5? But a couple of their losses very early were close games. I mean, that Warriors game was a thriller to start the season there. So, yeah, I'm not surprised either. I think they've been really good. You mentioned Paul George. I think he was like, what was he at, like 28-7-5 or something? His statistics have been nuts, picking up where he left off in the playoffs. And they're doing that with Reggie Jackson, not looking like the Reggie Jackson we know and love, not looking like, you know, Mr. July, Mr. Jude. I don't know what we were calling him in the playoffs, but once they get second round Reggie Jackson back, this team is going to take off. I really like their depth. I mean, you mentioned the guys. I mean, even Marcus Morris is a valuable player for them. They have good flexibility when
healthy.
Huge
player.
Yeah. I think Luke Kennard has really come on strong since the playoffs as well. So, yeah, I think we both kind of liked the Clippers headed into the season. I got to give you credit, though. You wrote about it. You really staked your claim, so I respect it, but that was a great call. And I never understood why people were so low on them or just kind of wrote them out of the conversation entirely when they still have really good players. And Paul George is, yeah, you mentioned, he can be a top 10 player any given night.
Yeah, so just a little pat on my own back there, even though the Clippers could easily fall into a tailspin, because that's just what the NBA... This NBA season is... I personally love it when it's like this.
It's every been a night, season of no runs.
You just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
so it's been so much fun. I just did the power rankings and even like writing the blurbs for... Mm-hmm. You can go check that out on SI.com, by the way. But even writing the blurbs for that, it's just like... It's tough. I can't like say anything too definitive about any team. It's like every description ends in an ellipsis as opposed to like an exclamation point was how I was thinking about it. But okay, I want to now pivot, Rohan, and I want to talk Utah Jazz because you sent, I know you love when I do this, but you sent a text to myself and Chris Herring.
Why are you such a snitch?
Co-host on this podcast over the weekend that was very, I think I described it as rude. It was rude the way you were
rude
taking shots
that I
at
took
the Utah
the time
Jazz.
To listen. I actually take the time to listen to the podcast that you and Chris do, and somehow I'm
Thank
the
you.
Rude one. Even though I don't ever get texts from you guys about the shows that I'm on, but it's cool.
I'm on all the shows, so I know what happens on them. I don't need to be texting anyone. by the way, I did text you guys when you did a bang-up job last Monday, and I sent you a text. I was like, that was a great episode.
No, you're right.
Rohan was coming at Brad Stevens.
I knew that I was lying immediately, so
yes, that's okay.
I apologize. Yeah.
Okay, back to the Jazz. So, the Jazz, they've lost four of their last five. They still rank third in net rating. They're 12th in defensive rating. They're second in offensive rating as we record this. And I just find them to be a really fascinating team. And I don't like the, and this, no shots at you, but I don't like the, like, wake me when it's the postseason for Utah way to process this team. Because I think that, it's fascinating on its own how a team responds to such a disappointing loss in the playoffs as they did last year with fundamentally the same roster. And they know that, they have the same coaching staff. They have the same basically everybody. And they know that they're going to have to do something different if they want to get where they want to go. And there still could be a trade easily before the trade deadline. I would actually be surprised if they didn't make one. Just a lot of pressure on this team. So I want to just like throw the fundamental question out to you. Do you feel like Utah's fate is sealed based on what you've seen from them play so far? I know they've stumbled pretty hard of late, including some bad losses to your Miami Heat. Just what's your take on the Jazz these days, Rohan?
So it's a bad loss when you lose to the Heat, and it's a good one when you beat them. I see how it is. Listen, I know that you don't like the wake me up when it's the postseason, but that only applies to, I think, one or two teams a year. And I'm not someone who wants to disrespect the regular season or disrespect the journey or not appreciate the process, etc. It just is we know what they are. You mentioned they brought back almost entirely the same roster. They made a couple of tweaks that I think we like. Rudy Gay hasn't played, but we like that signing and think it's going to be useful in the playoffs. I'm still going to be surprised, frankly, if they close with Rudy Gay in a playoff game over Rudy Gobert. I still don't see that happening, even though that's ostensibly why they brought him in. They just, Mike, there's so much sameness there. I mean, you look at it, they're still shooting a ton of threes, etc. I do think their defense is going to pick up. That's why, if it was the inverse, I think I'd be a little bit more worried if their offense was out of the top 10, because that is something I may be less confident year to year how that was going to carry over offensively, their shooting, etc. The fact that they're still potent from that end of the floor, I think, speaks better to their chances. We all know what Gobert can do defensively. They have a good defensive team. So and you mentioned they're still third in net rating, so I think they're still really good. It just I don't mean to minimize the gargantuan task that is even just making it through an NBA regular season, only that we know who they are. They've had the same team for basically 3 or 4 years now. we just have to see what they can do. We have to see if they're willing to do something different. And unfortunately, with a team like that, we're not going to find out until they're in a really high leverage moment.
So I hear that. I hear what you're saying. I guess what I think about it is, like, teams that are very, very good, which Utah is, that make sense, that play well, and are hell to defend and to score on. It's like, what are we even doing if, like, we're just giving up on a team like this and don't think that they can win? Like, what value is the regular season? And I'm personally a regular season cynic a little bit, but, like, what value is there if you are, you know, they have a historic net rating last year, they lose in the second round, can't get out of the second round. Like, what are we even doing with the regular season if, like, a team can be that good and have no chance in the playoffs based on how they play? I think they do have a chance. And so I want to see, like, I think that there's a lot of lucky breaks, a lot of bad lucky breaks that kind of go into postseason basketball. And sometimes we get a little too definitive about what we think about teams based on, you know, maybe 10 games.
Yeah.
And
I mean, the Hawks, right?
In those games.
Hawks, right?
Sure. Yeah, it goes the other way as well.
That Philly series, that Embiid bounces in that layup in game four, and it's a different conversation.
So, like, I kind of think that this team can be similar. There are obvious differences, but can be similar to the Milwaukee Bucks of last season, where it's like, they come in, no one cares what they do in the regular season. Meanwhile, in the regular season, they're, like, subtly changing how they play. They're switching a little bit more. And then they get into the playoffs, and they're able to kind of use how they evolved during the regular season to their advantage. Now, the big difference, obviously, there's two. Number one, like,
they don't have Giannis.
Who,
yeah.
Like,
it's a pretty big difference, Mike. It's like, just a couple clarifications. They're a lot like the Bucks. They just don't have someone who could put up 50 points in a finals game.
So, first of all, they do. But there's that. The other thing is, like, the Bucks traded for Jrue Holiday. That was, like, the big thing for last season. The Jazz, they signed Rudy Gay, who has not played this. They signed Hassan Whiteside, Heat culture, baby. Whiteside looks okay, but, like, he's Hassan Whiteside. We know what he is. Yeah. He's not Jrue Holiday. He's not, like
of course,
definitively
yeah, of course,
upgrading
of course. Yeah, yeah.
A big sore spot. So, like, my question from there is just, like, is there anything this team can do in your eyes to, like, win the title? Or do you feel like because they have Rudy Gobert and they have to play him big minutes, that, like, unless they were to make a trade for someone else who allowed them to play a dramatically different style, not like Eric Paschal, someone who's, like, very good, worth, like, you know, $18 million a year, $20 million a year, they make a trade like that, they could win the title. So, like, what do they do? I guess is my question to you.
So,
if you don't think that they can win,
part of the problem is, and isn't again, it's not to minimize the regular season, but we've said it before on this show. It's a different game. The playoffs are a different game than regular season basketball. It's just a different style of play, a different sport. Like, what you do well in the regular season doesn't necessarily carry over to the playoffs. I mean, your half-court offense becomes a lot more important. Matchups, mm-hmm. et cetera. It just becomes so much different. What could they do? I think my biggest fear with them, Mike, to kind of circle back to that Giannis thing, is are their best players good enough to be the best players on a championship-winning team? And that's where it gets tricky. I really like Donovan Mitchell, and I think that I told Chris Herring this last week, maybe we had him too low at 24 on our top 100. But is he good enough to be the number one guy? okay, let's say he is. Is Gobert good enough to be the number two? That's where it gets really dicey. What can they do? I think outside of making a trade, if Gobert can prove that he can take advantage of smaller players when other teams go small, then I would feel like now they have something. Now they've mixed in a new wrinkle because Gobert has taken a leap that he hasn't shown yet where, listen, Gobert's a really good player, and it's not like he doesn't get criticized, but at some point, he also does have to take the onus on himself a little bit where there are times when he has a guard switched onto him and the team's not looking at him. And I understand no one, you know, teams don't want to dump the ball in the post anymore, etc. But mm-hmm. what's playoff basketball about? It's hunting mismatches, right? It's finding a switch, getting your best guy on a switch that works for them and letting them attack it. Well, can Gobert maybe add that wrinkle to his game? Can he take even a marginal leap in that area? Because that's something that could make a tangible difference. It sounds silly, but if he can do that for three possessions in a playoff game, and that forces a coach to switch out of a defensive alignment, and now the Jazz are able to go on a run, etc., that could swing a playoff game. So if we're looking at something that's going to come from within, I think that's an option. But otherwise, like you said, I mean, they brought back the same team, so I don't know why my expectations for them should change necessarily.
So they're switching a little. You can tell, like, they're trying to switch more, and it's just been mostly disastrous. And you saw that in Milwaukee last year. That's, like, the way I bring the parallel with Milwaukee mostly, because Milwaukee was just so similar in how they played and what they thought they needed to do to get to the next level stylistically. So when you watch Utah and they're like, there's just obvious miscommunication with switches and late switches, and they don't know, two guys are pointing at each other always, and meanwhile someone's cutting to the basket for a layup. And so when they lose now, I don't get that stressed about it, and I think it'll help them in the long run. But what you say about Rudy is really smart. It would be wonderful if he was more of an offensive threat. And in the playoffs, nobody guards him. They're fine switching smalls on him. They switched Reggie Jackson on him over and over and over again in that series and won. So Rudy becoming a little bit more of a post presence. And frankly, Utah really going a little bit more in that direction. And, I don't know, emboldening Rudy to be more of a post presence might help, but that just might not be ever who he is, and that's okay. I still think whenever I watch Utah, the big problem in the playoffs is the perimeter defense, and I just want them so badly to get that big, like, strong wing who can guard fours, who can play the four on offense and defense, but can also switch onto a smaller ball handler and do fine. Royce O'Neal is, like, the only plus like perimeter defender on this team, and like that's what it always comes down to with me and the Utah Jazz. And I just wonder if this year is finally going to be the year where, like, before the trade deadline, I know that they don't have a lot of picks, but scrounging together whatever you can and adding it to, like, Jordan Clarkson or Jordan Clarkson and Joe Ingles, or, like, I don't know, you know, if they were to think, just think about Utah, like, think about Utah with Jeremy Grant, right?
Yeah.
Like a Jeremy Grant type. Wouldn't that be just, like, absolutely, like, transformational in how you view them? Because it would for me. I would be like, this team is going to win the title now. I think this is the missing piece. And that's going to be the question for me, if they can actually swing a deal like that for a player like that. You saw it last year with Denver and Aaron Gordon. That's the type of trade I want to see Utah make. I know that they don't have a lot of resources. I just don't think you can go into the playoffs with, like, I love Joe Ingles. Jordan Clarkson just won Sixth Man of the Year. But, like, they're going to have to give up something to make the changes that they need to, I think, particularly in the perimeter defense area.
You know what's funny? I bet they would tell you they made that Drew trade a year earlier when they did the Conley trade, right? Which I think that's what they would kind of argue. That was the third quote-unquote star we brought in.
Fair.
And what's kind of crazy, I mean, you talk about the thin line of the NBA playoffs and as much guff as we kind of give the Jazz, they quote, you know, they blow the 3-1 lead in the bubble. Conley misses a lot of games in that series. His shot in game 7 at the end of that crazy sequence rims out. He almost won that series, Mike. That was a crazy game. Denver almost blew it in an absolutely mind-numbing way in that game 7, and Conley was going to be the reason why. So, and they have shown a willingness. So I do want to commend them for that, because I thought the Conley trade was great. I remember headed in that summer, Rubio was their point guard, and I was like, can they maybe get Kyle Lowry if the Raptors are going to blow this thing up post-Kawhi? They go out and get Conley instead. So I do think they have a willingness. The perimeter defense thing I do think has been – that's another one of those things where it's easier to cover up for something like that in the regular season when teams aren't mismatch hunting as much. They aren't putting the spotlight on Gobert as much, et cetera, and it becomes a more magnified issue in the playoffs when teams kind of really narrow their focus of what they want to do offensively. So, I wonder who's out there. I do wonder if Detroit is going to maybe look to move on from Jeremy Grant at some point. I do like that fit.
Please, I hope so.
You say that wearing the Pistons hoodie today, which is really funny.
I don't usually like to wear my NBA paraphernalia when we do these videos, but I felt like
I think
this was
you should.
One,
I don't know why. I don't know why we should be anti NBA paraphernalia on this podcast. I think that's we're here. We like the NBA. There's no secret. You know what I mean? I don't.
Yes,
think we're,
it's we're true. Not, we do. We do like, love the NBA.
We like. Guess what we like? We like basketball. We like slam dunks. Cool NBA uniforms.
Very fair.
Cool NBA logos. Stuff, NBA stuff from the 90s. We love all of it. So I do like the idea of them maybe bringing someone in the perimeter. I mean, I like them making a change because I don't think they're quite at the Portland level where it's like, how many years are we going to run it back with this exact same core, etc. But how long have we seen, you know, the Ingles, Royce O'Neal, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Mitchell, Gobert, Jazz? It's, you know, it's like, what is a long-running sitcom on TV right now? I don't even know. They're like the Big Bang Theory. They put up massive numbers. The people on the show stay the same, but literally no one talks about them. That's who they are. And the Big Bang Theory is, guess what? It's massively successful. You know, Sheldon or whatever his name is got the spinoff and like $30 million an episode or whatever the hell he makes. To be on that stupid show. So good for them. I like the idea of them mixing it up, making a trade, something. What I'll say about that is they do have to be cautious because while I think in general, I don't think you feel this way. I know I do. I can't speak for you. I like when teams take risks. I like when they kind of go for it. And one reason I really respected Daryl Morey's Rockets tenure is because even if they never won, he made the bold play instead of playing it safe and wondering if we'll get lucky. He said, I'm going to make the bold move and see if it gets my team over the top, even if it didn't always work out. I'd like to see the Jazz take that move, and I wouldn't criticize them if it didn't work because sometimes you need to make the bold move. You just have to be really careful because those are those risk-reward scenarios where either it works fantastically and you win, or it doesn't work, and now you're in a worse spot than you were before.
All well said. Let's revisit the Jazz soon. I enjoy watching them play basketball. I enjoy watching Donovan play basketball. A quick stat about them last year. I mean, they lead the league in three-point rate for the second season in a row. Last year, they were the fourth most accurate in three-point percentage, and this year they're 27th in three-point percentage. So that is also a factor in them losing games. Okay.
Well, Mike, can I actually wrap up our conversation about the Jazz
with
something entirely
sure.
different?
Yes.
Help settle. You know, I'm in Los Angeles. I live in Los Angeles, as I mentioned. Yesterday, I was driving to the airport and drove by the highway where they filmed La La Land, a movie famously about Jazz. Curious if you land on an opinion for or against La La Land.
Never seen it.
Wow. Okay.
Never will.
Wow. Never will.
So that's
okay. I think that's the answer. I feel I think that's the answer. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good to know.
Team Moonlight forever. And yeah, whatever. I'm gonna pit those two against each other for no reason.
I don't know why we have to pit those two. Yeah. Okay.
Go Moonlight. Okay, so let's get to this email. We'll close on with this wonderful email from Liam, who writes, "Even though we have only had a small sample size, it's safe to say that there are a lot of players taking pretty big leaps this season. Some of them we saw coming from a mile away, some we never even thought about. So I was wondering what players who have taken leaps this season have surprised you the most? Also, what players who have taken jumps surprised you the least?" So I'll just start real quick with a not surprising one that I'm sure you agree with. That is Ja Morant. That's yep. just the every he's the en vogue still, even though Memphis has really taken a tumble. Ja Morant's numbers are through the roof. He's still unguardable. He's still a magician on the basketball court.
He is pound for pound maybe the most fun guy to watch in the league right now. Maybe. Steph is always going to be Steph, but it's the newness of Morant and kind of just the – I don't want to say we're taking Steph for granted, but it's just kind of the youthful bounce of Ja Morant really makes him – it's just so unpredictable.
Yes, 100%. When you said maybe pound for pound the most exciting, I was like, who is – and then you said Steph, and I was like, okay, I'll give you Steph. Steph is also very fun. But Ja is just – he's a wonderland. Love watching him play basketball. And
he's a wonderland.
he's a wonderland. So Ja, yes, that would be I think guys who've made a leap who we just knew. It's like it's the third year. That's typically third or fourth year is when players this talented, second overall pick, make leaps. And so Ja did not surprise me at all. Who did not surprise you who's taken a big leap, Rohan?
Well, Ja, I think, was definitely up there. This one, I wouldn't even say it's a big leap. But it's not surprising to me that Paul George has been in the MVP conversation. I just want to really respect the work Paul George has done this season and what he was doing coming out of the playoffs last year. And I know it's a little bit of a curveball here, but he's been so good. And, you know, I regret not putting him even in the honorable mention of my MVP column that I wrote last week. Obviously, the Clippers continued winning since then. But I know that Liam's probably like wondering, like, why the hell am I talking about Paul George right now, not one of these younger players. But I think it's fair to say there were some questions. Oh, can he be a number one guy? What's Paul George's ceiling? We don't trust him in the playoffs, etc. And he's been really, really good. So I did want to shout out Paul George, and it wasn't surprising to me only because I've always had faith in him. I mean, I can give you a guy who I'm very surprised about.
Okay.
I mean, the obvious one's got to be Miles Bridges.
Okay, that's not who I have here, but I am surprised by Miles Bridges. Yes.
I mean, he's having
I agree.
He's having one of the best bet on yourself and then double down seasons, I think, in the history of modern professional basketball, and that he turned down a 4-year, $60 million contract in the offseason. And I think headed into this season, we would have been like, wow, it would have been great for Miles Bridges to get Mikhail Bridges money, like 4 years, $90 million. That'd be spectacular for him. Would it shock you if he got a max offer as a restricted free agent in the summer?
Yes.
I don't think
that would actually shock me.
I would not shock me if some small market team or somebody says, yeah, we'll throw the bag at Miles Bridges and let him be our number one scorer, etc. I mean, I think he's taken a leap that no one saw coming. I think he's going to be an all-star and rightfully so. I did not see that coming. I've always liked his game. You talk about guys who are fun to watch, him out on the fast break, dunking, etc. But the fact that he has increased his volume and efficiency at the same time, I think he's been, to me, the runaway breakout player of the season, and I'd be shocked if he did not win most improved.
Okay, so a player who has taken a leap that has shocked me even more than Bridges in the nicest possible way, Orlando Magic point guard Cole Anthony. I don't know if you know this about me, Rohan.
You could have stopped at Orlando Magic, but continue.
when Cole Anthony was 16 years old, I went to his home and interviewed basically his entire family and wrote this profile about him and got to know him a little bit, watched him work out a bunch of times, hung out. At the time, he was like, it was like him and Zion were kind of vying for the number one, like, prospect in that class. It was like him, Zion, RJ Barrett. I think that was the high school class. And, you know, he goes to college, gets hurt, draft stock falls to Orlando, has a season last year that's like, okay, what is this player going to be? Is he, you know, he's running a million pick and rolls. He's very inefficient, super athletic, but like the three ball isn't falling. So, you know, can he be a high usage primary ball handler? It didn't look like it last season. And then this year it's like, okay, his 3-point rate has skyrocketed and he's making the threes. He's getting to the free throw line. He's grabbing rebounds and going for rebounds like he's Russell Westbrook. There's a drop in selfishness in terms of shot selection, I feel, when I watch him play. And it's just awesome. Like, I was always trying to stay really optimistic about him, and to see him get to where he is this early in his career and figure some things out, it's just been really fun. And he's a reason why I watch the Orlando Magic probably more than any sane person should right now.
I mean, I believe this came up last time we spoke on this podcast, but the Magic starting five is great. Cole Anthony's been really good. Mo Bamba has been like playing the best basketball of his career. They have a few guys on the team who I think are actually playing really well. Franz Wagner too. I think rookies can't really make leaps, but I think that's a great pick. Cole Anthony's been another guy who's been fun. The post game interviews, I love it. I think it's great for guys to be given the space to improve. I think a lot of young players, the book is written on them too early in their careers. And, you know, it gets written, this guy is this, he's never going to be able to do X, Y, Z. You know, the Magic, I mean, mostly through benefit of just being bad, we're like, let's keep giving him the ball. And lo and behold, I think he's had an opportunity to develop. And he's been really good. So I think that's a great pick. Listen, they've had moments where, like, you know, I think they've actually been really good and are showing kind of finally the elements of a foundation of a good team. And it's going to be really interesting, I think, when Jonathan Isaac is kind of fully functional, how they decide to work him back in and kind of who becomes the best player on that team and what are their best lineups, etc. But for now, I think that's a great pick. He's been really, really good.
Yeah, and especially, you know, you look at the draft, they take Jalen Suggs, who seemingly plays the same position. Markel Fultz, they just signed to an extension, so they obviously believe in him. And you're just kind of like, wow, did they already give up on Cole Anthony? Like, what's the deal here? Because they just drafted him 15th overall. So his play has been phenomenal and really fun. And I'm not going to go there with you on Mo Bamba just yet. Like, Mobamba, get in the post, my guy. Like, these threes, they're just too much for me.
He wants to shoot.
It's too much. It's just too much. I mean, come on, Mo. Come on, you're better than that.
Bro, he's spacing the floor.
Yeah, he's spacing the floor, all right.
Yeah.
Rohan, do you have any other players who are making leaps, or can we kind of wrap up today's show on that?
I would like to shout out, you know, Jordan Poole, I think, has been really good for the Warriors. I want to throw him out there. But yeah, other than that, I love the Cole Anthony pick. Miles Bridges, high on my list. I don't know if you have anyone else that you want to throw in the mix here.
Not really. There were elements of players not making leaps that I wanted to shut up, but it seems too mean, so I'm not going to do
that
it.
That does and we seem can, a little mean, yeah.
We can address on a later
This guy hasn't improved at all,
point.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that guy. So thank you once again to all of our listeners for tuning in, for subscribing, and keep those emails coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everyone, please stay safe, and everyone, please continue to enjoy this wonderful NBA season.